Hi, this is Dan Melton. Thanks for joining us for this podcast of St. Andrew's Weekly Message. I hope you enjoy it. I encourage you to listen through the words to what God is saying to you, and may the peace of God be known through your life this week. Paul is the manager of a Western hotel owned by Western corporations, and the Rwandans know well enough not to touch that, not to go inside, so it is a safe haven. Also, there are UN troops that are there, and they are able to take a few people with them, including an invitation to Paul and his family, but they are actually commanded to leave the area and abandon the Rwandans as the genocide takes place. In this scene, Paul and his family are getting ready to leave the hotel, leave everybody there, possibly vulnerable to attack, and he is getting ready to load onto the UN convoy. It did occur to me this is a bit of an intense clip, so we're going to invite you all to kind of keep the sound levels low because there's some intense emotion being expressed, and it is a dramatization of something that happened. Let's watch. Paul is an example of a real-life person who goes beyond what is required, beyond normal expectations and social norms, beyond procedures. He has thrown out the policy manual at this point so that he can demonstrate a transformational kind of grace and bravery and kindness and compassion. The context that we're going to talk about today is very different, but Jesus has a parable about somebody else who throws the norms away. He is a man who demonstrates a strange and unexpected kind of grace. Let's turn to Matthew chapter 20. For the kingdom of heaven, Jesus says, is like a landowner who went out early in the morning to hire laborers for his vineyard. After agreeing with the laborers for the usual daily wage, he sent them into his vineyard. When he went out about 9 o'clock, he saw other people standing idle in the marketplace. They needed a job. He said to them, well, you come too. You go into the vineyard and I'll pay you whatever's right. So they went. When he went out again about noon and about 3 o'clock, he did the same thing. And about 5 o'clock, he went out and found others standing around. And he said to them, why are you even standing here not doing anything all day? They said, nobody's hired us. He said, will you come to my vineyard too? You go work. When the evening came, the owner of the vineyard said to his manager, call the laborers and give them their pay, beginning with the last and then going to the first. When those hired about 5 o'clock came, each of them received the usual full day's wage. Now, when the first came, they thought, well, this is great. We're going to get a bonus. We worked the hardest. And when they received the usual daily wage, they grumbled against the landowner, saying, hey, these guys only worked an hour, and you've made them equal to us. We were standing out in the sun all day in the scorching heat. But Jesus replied to one of them, friend, I'm not doing anything wrong to you. Did you not agree with me for the usual daily wage? Take what belongs to you and go. I choose to give this guy, the last, the same as I give you. Am I not allowed to do what I choose with what belongs to me? Or are you envious because I'm generous? So Jesus concludes, the last will be first and the first will be last. That last phrase is emblazoned in my mind because my family used to play board games, and when my dad would leap over my token for come from behind, he would remind me that the last will be first, and then he would win the game. It's an unusual application of Jesus' teachings, I must say, but it emblazoned that in my mind. Jesus tells this parable, and it's often the case we might be tempted initially to agree with the people in the parable who will later be shown to be missing the whole point. But after all, on the face of it, this does not exactly seem like good HR to give the people who show up last the full day's wage. The people who are first don't get a bonus. You might incentivize people to be lazy in the future, knowing that this guy is an easy mark. In his book, The Relentless Tenderness of Jesus, author Brennan Manning says this, speaking about the workers who were hired at the end of the day. One presumes they took their time getting there, shuffled about and did a minimum of work. Then to the surprise, they get the full day's pay. In this familiar parable, as told by other rabbis of Jesus' day, as the other rabbis told it, those who arrived at the 11th hour earned the whole day's pay because they worked extra hard. But in Jesus' version, the emphasis is not on the diligence of the workers, but on the gratuitous generosity of the farmer. Presumably, the family of the loafers depended on this income for their nightly meal. But it was a mad, crazy, insanely generous act. No human farmer or businessman could behave that way and remain in business for very long. Even today, he continues, we are offended by this overpayment of the loafers and the freeloaders. The other workers certainly were. The men who came last have put in only 1 hour, they complain, and you've treated them the same of us. The farmer's answer, am I being unjust to you? Didn't we agree on your wage? Haven't I the right to do what I like with my own? I thought quite a bit about this parable this week, and like lots of Jesus' teachings, you can look at them from different angles and trajectories and see different things. Jesus' teachings are like a diamond. You can walk around them and see all different kinds of facets. First of all, it calls up the issue of fairness, right? Our human idea of what fairness is. Shouldn't somebody be calling the union here and say, hey, there's this guy, the unfair labor practices here, he needs a talking to if he wants to work with our union workers. We all do things a certain way, and that protects us. But this guy, he's changing the rules, and that's not okay. And I don't think this parable has anything to do with fairness. Apparently, it does not. Like Paul the hotelier, this farmer is seen beyond the norms. He's not so concerned with the minimum amount of fairness. He is concerned with the maximum amount of generosity. How many people can I help? How many people can I possibly help? How many can I bring who are out in the cold, who are vulnerable, who are perhaps not the best workers but have families to feed? How many people can I help? It's almost like when you read the parable, you wonder if these other workers were even necessary. I mean, we can assume that the early workers were the best workers. They probably were knocking out their job. It's almost like these other people that got hired as an excuse to take care of them in a way without telling them that that was actually the plan. On the immediate level, it's a reminder to those in the God movement who are usually poor, disenfranchised, and educated. Jesus' disciples certainly are not super educated folks with lots of power in society and not having done well, but some of them probably did well for themselves in business. Lots of ways to get to success, but that's not necessarily who is following Jesus. They haven't studied like the Pharisees. They haven't climbed the power structure of the temple system. Jesus reminds them, hang in there. It's okay. The last is going to be first. We could go into all kinds of other implications about this parable. We could talk about what some of you Bible scholars out there know as the tension between the Gentiles and the Jews in the New Testament, and the sudden discovery that after all the work that the Jews have done throughout salvation history from the time of Abraham, hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of years before, suddenly the new followers of the God movement start having visions that very clearly communicate, you're supposed to include the Gentiles too, the uncircumcised, those that don't even know our laws or our history, who Abraham even was. They're coming in too. And last but not least, some theologians and thinkers wonder if this is an implication about salvation. Very serious theological speculation about whether or not one day God's love will finally overcome all evil and bring everybody into eternal life. That's a whole sermon in itself, and there's a lot of debate on that question. But any way you look at this parable, it is not a portrait of a God who is a small-minded bean counter, like the Pharisees, looking for every infraction and ready to smack the back of your hand with a ruler. That's not the portrait that Jesus draws. This is a new portrait of who God is, and it's a scandal. It's hard to convey. For Jesus' hearers, for the Pharisees, the other religious leaders, this is a scandal. That someone would be this graceful, and that Jesus is implying that this is who God is. I actually want to take the parable, having said all that, which is a sort of a traditional interpretation of the parable, I want to take it in a completely different direction. This is what occurred to me. We talked about the crazy farmer. I want to talk about the early worker. The early worker. Don't be this guy or this person. Don't be this guy or this person. Reminds me, those of you that know the Gospel of Luke, there's another parable, but the prodigal son, somebody who doesn't deserve welcome is welcomed home, and there's an elder brother who's like, you gotta be kidding me, I've been the good guy all along, and you're gonna bring him back? This reminds me of the early worker. You don't wanna be this guy. You don't wanna be this person. The early worker is problematic. You say, why? They showed up, they did their job. What's problematic about that? That part's not problematic at all. But now they're complaining. You might even say whining. And as I question myself and do practice the discipline of self-observation, I ask myself, could that be me? Could that be me? How do I avoid that? How do I become instead a grateful and content worker in God's fields? I mentioned last week that I had the opportunity last Saturday to attend a morning with James Hollis at Catonsville Presbyterian Church. Hollis is an internationally known author, psychologist who in his 70s moved from Houston to D.C. to become director of the Jung Center, named after the very famous psychologist Carl Jung. There were probably 80 people in this room, and it was a conversation, sort of lecture-y, but also conversation format. I sort of expected this guy to be kind of, you know, have some mystique around him, to be kind of a guru, and actually is a somebody that you could just walk up to, very plain spoken, very straightforward, very approachable and friendly. Towards the end of his talk, he talked about how he personally prepares for his day. And he said, I live on the sixth floor in DC in my building, and this is sort of my mantra to myself in the elevator as I ride down to street level, and it has three parts. I'm going to paraphrase it. The first one startled me a little bit because it sounded a little sharp and harsh to me. And he wasn't telling us that we should say this to ourselves, but he was just saying, this is what I do. He said, the first thing I tell myself in the elevator is, shut up. Shut up. I thought, well, wait, I thought this was about psychology and like the inner child and healing our wounds. And I like that stuff, but I didn't expect to hear shut up at this thing. But here's what he meant. He wasn't saying be down on yourself or harsh with yourself or suppress your feelings. Nothing like that to diminish yourself. What he meant was, you know, there are people in this world with real problems. I'm not one of them. I have ordinary problems. So don't wallow in self-pity. Don't whine. Stop feeling sorry for yourself. Shut up. Don't get stuck in that trap of self-pity because it will keep you from living your life. He said, the second thing I say to myself is suit up. That means prepare to face the day. Today I'm going to pay my dues. Today I'm going to do my homework on life. Suit up. The third, he said, is I tell myself, I'm going to show up today. I'm going to show up. By this, he means do the best you can. Step onto the field. He said, fail better. Fail better. You see, he's not standing around asking himself questions like, is life fair to me? He's asking, how am I going to show up on the field? What is life asking of me today? What does the universe want to do and manifest through me? And this was a powerful reminder to me that moving through life doesn't need to be about my comfort all the time. I like it when it is, but it doesn't need to be that way all the time. Because life ultimately, I say, is not about comfort. It's about meaning. And I find that meaning in my relationships with God. I find my meaning in stepping onto the vineyard field every day and saying, what do you want to do? I'm here. I'm ready to work. I'm ready to do the good work that you have created me to do with gratitude and joy. The parable of the vineyard, it's a parable about an insanely generous God. It's also about the one who was out in the cold and who was brought outside whether he or she deserved it or not. And by implication, it's also about the person that we can be as the early worker, a person we can grow into by becoming someone truly gracious, large-hearted, ready to step on the vineyard field to serve God. Let's take a moment of relative quiet here to let that sink in. Let's engage in a moment of meditative prayer. Take a moment to still your heart and mind. Take a breath. Call yourself present. Vineyards tend to be beautiful. Abundant with fruit. We have the opportunity to step on and do something great in life that creates meaning. We also have the opportunity, rather than to judge the lazy one who comes last, to say, come on over here and work next to me. Let's get to know one another's life stories. Is there somewhere in life where you're being called to step onto the field? Is there something that wants to be manifested through you? That if you're stuck in self-pity or something else, you might not see that. Could you get yourself unstuck? Could you go through a process of healing if that needs to happen? Sometimes we absolutely need to go through that process. What wants to be said, done, expressed through you as you step onto the vineyards in the fields of God? Take a moment just to open yourself to the question and ask God. God, I make myself available to do what I have been created to do without complaining, but in true gratitude. Manifest that through me. In the name of Christ, amen.